This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Big Bear Mark.
This is Luke the Wonder Cub.
And this is a podcast for Brekkie Bears
on Joy 94.9. Here on the Brekkie Bears with Luke, Mark and SJ. In studio right now, we have a gentleman who's probably best known for the 10-time Emmy Award-winning reality TV show, The Amazing Race. He is the host with the most, also the writer and star of La Ride, which is currently showing at Acme here in Melbourne. We've got Phil Cogan here in the studio. Woo! Hi, Phil.
Thanks for having me here.
Welcome.
I was just saying that I felt like a little underdressed without my beard, without a beard.
Welcome to the club, my friend.
Yes, right?
I know, seriously, don't you feel completely inadequate?
I just feel like I need like a major dose of testosterone. You guys have like extremely impressive beards.
Well, thank you very much. With the bear territory, we've got to have a beard.
Yeah, no, there have are you really ever... impressive beards. I tried to grow one when I rode around France, and it was so pathetic that my dad, who can really grow a beard, said, Phil, just give it up and shave.
Yeah,
that
I was going to say I didn't notice that in the documentary.
There was some stubble. There was definitely some
trying.
Growth.
That was a 3-week effort of trying to grow a beard.
Yeah,
whatever you saw.
Yeah, sorry.
Not really impressive
even
at
notice.
All.
I was like, what a clean shaven gentleman.
Well, my dad said, get rid of the bum fluff off your face. You're a grown man. Stop mucking around with that thing. Whatever
exactly.
It is.
Now, look, we will get to the documentary, but we do obviously we want to talk about The Amazing Race a little bit as well. 10 wins out of 14 nominations for primetime Emmys. That's an amazing record.
Well, look, I think The Amazing Race came along at the right time. Actually, initially, it didn't come along at the right time because we launched just before September 11th. But I think after that, once the world just got a lot smaller very, very quickly after 9/11, I think people started talking more about the world and understanding the world. It sort of forced everybody to kind of, particularly Americans, to acknowledge that there was a world outside the United States. And so I think a lot of people just became more fascinated with the idea that there was this world out there to be discovered. And if you took ordinary Americans and put them out into the real world, it could be really interesting television.
It could be. What about in light of, look, current politics, I've got to say, with Donald Trump and the Muslim ban, do you think it's going to change the show at all?
Well, you know, I'm not happy with, obviously, with what's going on, because one of the things that we really pride ourselves with on Amazing Race is tolerance and acceptance for difference. And I feel like we've come so far, just in the time that the show has been on the air.
Yeah.
If you look at we were the first reality show to have an openly gay couple on as contestants, going right back to the Guidos in season one. And they have, you know, continued to be a part of and outspoken as part of the Amazing Race family. We've had Muslims on our show. We've had black and white and tall and short, straight, gay, everything in between. And I think the point is we've really tried to perpetuate the idea that difference is okay and acceptance is an important part of how we live our lives. I just feel, unfortunately, that President Trump he's polarizing the country. I feel like we're going backwards, and it's really upsetting, actually, because a lot of Americans, as you know, are just not like that. And so a lot of people are looking at I'm a New Zealander, even though I've got this messed up accent, but I think a lot of people go, oh, Americans are all, you know, look at the Americans, but hopefully the world is taking note of those people who are getting out with a voice and saying, look, this is not representative of all of us.
Yeah.
Just some of us.
Yeah. Was there one country on The Amazing Race that completely surprised you and blew you away with something that was sort of different about it?
Well, for me, it's always about how the teams react to where we are.
Mm.
So I remember in season three when we were in a Muslim country, and the teams couldn't believe that these Muslim people were offering them money and helping them. And it's not their fault. It's not the audience's fault or the team's fault. It's just that unfortunately, every time something goes wrong in the world, and or outside America, it makes news. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. So people who maybe have never owned a passport, never left their state, never traveled, who have heard certain stereotypes about different types of people, they make assumptions based on that, and it's based on what they see. So we've tried to always try to say to people, well, hold on a second. Are there bad Muslims? Yes. But are there good ones? Yes. And just like there are crazy Christian people that go do ridiculous things, yeah, like shooting people up in a mosque. I mean, so look, you can find good and bad everywhere. But what I love is when we kind of open people's eyes to a different understanding of the world. And again, going back to this idea that we are celebrating in primetime television what's good in the world as opposed to what is bad. And very rarely in network primetime television do you see the celebration of what's good outside of America as opposed to what's bad outside America.
So true. Was there a moment that you've kind of thought where it was possibly the worst moment on The Amazing Race for you, that you've gone, this is a really, really bad day and everything's gone wrong? Come on, dish the dirt, Phil.
Well, I had in season 11, when I was waiting for the Guidos to come in, I was out in Poland, out in the freezing cold for 19 hours. That was not pleasant.
Wow.
I still give the Guidos a hard time about that.
So you actually are waiting there that whole time. That's just not television making it look like you're there and you're actually inside with a cup
in
of
a
cocoa.
Trailer.
12 shows, 21 days. It's me, a cameraman, and a sound guy. I write my own scripts, and I've kept the crew really, really lean. There's no makeup or wardrobe or, you know, look, I'm not going to complain at all because I think I have the most incredible job. And I love my job. But there is hardships to the job sometimes too, where we maybe don't get to a hotel for days on end. But I wouldn't change any of it. 12 shows in 21 days, upwards of 80,000 kilometers in an average episode. You only have to do the math and realize that we're on a plane pretty much on average every day. And a lot of times we don't get to hotels, and I'm fine with that. I love it.
And your involvement, sorry, Mark, your involvement shines through in the show anyway. I'm just hearing that, knowing that now. But also, I mean, lots of the challenges that are set up for the guys to do, you're doing them yourself as well as part of the episode. You're this integral part where you're actually jumping off a bungee jump or, you know, going down a massive water slide and stuff like that. So,
well, people like to know, I guess, that you're there when the teams are there. So I started doing these live updates where I'm in the moment and the first team's tour, you know, comes into a challenge and arrives, and I do a live update and say that, you know, Bethany and Anthony and Bethany are, you know, running in first. And they love that because in the beginning, a lot of people thought that we shot this show over the 13 weeks that it took to play the show out on TV. They didn't realize that we were doing it all in 21 days. Mm. When we did season one, we actually did the first season in 32 days. And then because of budget constraints and time constraints, and we've now slowly cut this down to shooting pretty much a show every 36 hours or whatever.
So, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. Now, is it true that you almost became the host of Survivor and not The Amazing Race?
No way.
Yeah, that is true. Back in 2000... I was shortlisted along with Jeff Probst, who I had worked with at FX.
Yeah.
I had worked with an Australian producer by the name of Peter Faman, who directed Crocodile Dundee, and he'd taken a chance on me as a on-air talent at a time when I had a New Zealand accent. And Tom Bergeron from Dancing with the Stars was on that network, and Jeff Probst was there. And so we were all part of this group. Orlando Jones was another guy who's gone on to do acting work and hosting work. And so that was a cable show that ended up going on the Fox network. But the idea of having a New Zealander or somebody with a foreign accent on a network television show was not really heard of.
No.
And so that was a question that came up, even though I had got to this point where it was between him and I, was the idea that there was going to be this guy with this weird accent. It's still weird. But the point is that if you think about how much has changed in television since that time, we've had Simon Cowell and Kat Deely, So You Think You Can Dance, and we've had, you know, Nigel Lithgow and a bunch of accents, Heidi Klum. Now, it's not uncommon to hear a foreign accent in network television. But in 2000, when Survivor was starting, Even when I got Amazing Race on the same network, I was shortlisted to three, and then there was some question. Well, should we? And then they finally gave me a shot. They actually asked me to Americanize my accent. Now, in 2016, they would – 17, isn't it? 2017, they wouldn't care.
Yeah, exactly.
But back then, they really did care. So that is true, yes.
I've got one more Amazing Race question, and then we can start talking about your fantastic documentary. Me and my best friend – in training for the Amazing Race, Australia. I have to wait till I'm an Australian citizen to do this. She says hi, by the way. Her name's Carly. I'm from Zimbabwe.
No way.
Yeah. So I'm not from here. So I'm like, I'm a fake Aussie. Well, so I've also got the weird accent.
But you've got the accent down.
Oh, really?
Don't you think?
Phil says I have an Aussie accent.
No, okay.
I like accents. And I wouldn't have picked that you were from Zimbabwe. But anyway.
Thank you. So we're in training, me and her. And we'll do things like we'll drive in the car and we'll try and guess how far we've gone, which is 100 meters and then a kilometer. And we'll do the escape room where you work out puzzles. So we're trying to train ourselves to be good at the Amazing Race.
Right.
What tips can you give us so that we can guarantee that we get on the show and win, obviously?
Yeah.
Just no pressure.
Just that you're incompetent at pretty much everything.
You're incompetent at pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Great.
So forget everything you've been doing. You've got to forget it.
Like, walk in. How are you with directions? Oh, we're terrible. Do you guys squabble when you're driving around? Yes. Can you drive a stick? Barely.
Okay, great.
How do you guys get on most of the time? Not really that well. Like, most of the time, we're not. Look, I mean,
because they want the good TV.
Well, look, at the end of the day, we're looking for interesting characters. And we don't want them to be totally bumbling, you know, around the world. But it sure as hell does make much better TV to watch people bumbling their way around the place than it does when you know, I get people come up to me and they go, I've run 7 marathons in 7 different continents. I speak 12 languages. I went to MIT. I really know directions, and I basically have memorized the entire Encyclopedia Britannica, and I also understand every single country and every single place. And you go, well, you'd be really boring to be on The Amazing Race.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, good to know.
So
don't do anything well.
I would go down to a pub and start drinking heavily.
Great.
and when you can't see your feet, you're probably at the right fitness level. And just forget everything you've ever learned about anything.
So stop training immediately.
I'll stop training immediately.
Luke would be perfect. We should go on it. We'd be absolutely perfect for it.
Thanks, Mark.
When you think about the best teams on Amazing Race, they're people who have never owned a passport, never left their state, really don't have any understanding of the world. Because when you see David and Mary, the coal miners from Kentucky, it's so interesting to watch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're you want to talk about fish out of water.
Thank you for
the
term.
So you were born just 1 mile from here.
Totally. Haven't left.
You don't even
ever
know where Zimbabwe is. you couldn't point out a country on a world map. And you don't have, yeah.
No, and I fight all the time with my friend.
Constantly.
Love it.
Yeah. It's a wonder you guys even talk to each other.
Good tip.
Done. Excellent.
Now we have to talk about Laride, of course.
Well, you don't have to. Nobody's forcing you to.
I mean,
apart from the publicist in the corner right now waving at you, pointing at the clock, going,
talk about the documentary.
We have to because we saw it and we loved it. Okay. I mean, recreating the original 1928 Tour de France, including using a vintage 1928 bike, so no gears, to ride around France and to recreate that. Why would you do something like this?
Yeah, why? Yeah.
Well, it starts with me not being very bright, I think. Yeah,
You'd be perfect on The Amazing
Clearly
Race.
My IQ is like maybe 47. look, I found this great story about the first English-speaking team to ride in the Tour de France. I'm a big fan of the Tour de France. I love everything about the Tour de France. Mostly the great bread and wine that you get in France and then the great scenery while you're watching an incredible sporting event. Which to me is the toughest sporting event on the planet, which goes on for 3 weeks and all these towns bid and there's so much passion involved. And I just love the countryside in France in the summer. It's incredible with the sunflowers. So that with this story about the first English-speaking team who happened to be from New Zealand and Australia, one New Zealander and three Australians. And I thought, how does nobody know about this? Mm. So Hubert Opperman, an extraordinary Australian, he was instrumental in getting rid of the White Australia policy, you know, at a time when there was quite a bit of resistance. Incredibly gifted cyclist who was without doubt right up there with Bradman in terms of his sporting abilities. An amazing man. So I thought, if we're going to tell this, there's very little about the story known. There's very little known about what happened specifically with them. Mm. It's been forgotten for 85 years. They're no longer alive, these men, to interview. And I thought, we cannot let another year go by to let this story disappear. And realizing that we could not sit these subjects down, could not sit Harry and Sir Hubert Opperman down to talk to them, we took a very bold choice to put ourselves in the film in the story, I should say. So rather than a typical documentary approach where you're on the outside, you look back at the story and you share it with the audience, like a Ken Burns kind of approach, we decided we would jump in and tell the story from the inside out, because the only way to really articulate or to share with the audience how hard it was for them was to let the audience see how hard it was for us.
It was fantastic. I mean, it gripped us the entire way through.
Yeah,
it did.
The 24-hour, what was it called? The death
stage.
In the Pyrenees.
24 hours riding, cameras rolling the whole time. I mean, we saw the impact it had on you on film, but I mean, in your own words, what was that like reflecting on that now?
Well, I want to just remind anybody who watches the film, just the fact that my mom and dad were driving the support vehicle, and my dad is sitting in a vehicle driving for almost 24 hours, and my mom is up longer than any of us and mentally tougher than any of us by none. And that's how handmade this film was. I mean, my mom, my dad, my brother doing the navigation. My best friend, Scott, sat on a motorbike for almost 6,000 kilometers backwards around France, holding a camera that weighs about 12 kilograms, shooting in the middle of the night, trying to focus when the depth of field, the ability to focus at night and the little limited light is so difficult. So I just want to remind everybody that as hard as it was for us to ride our bicycles, what they were going through was so hard.
Yeah.
But I was hallucinating, and I'll tell you an interesting story. After we finished, it was almost 24 hours, my friend Ben and I, who rode with me, the next day we were so exhausted. And I remember that I had been hallucinating, and I kept seeing Sir Hubert Opperman and the Peloton from 1928 in black and white ahead of us. That was what I remembered, right? But then I said to my friend Ben, I said, did you see the sperm that was swimming up the road last night? And he was like, dude, what are you talking about? I said, no, I'm telling you, there was like this giant sperm swimming up the road. And he said, dude, you are so out of it. You are so ridiculous. That is the most absurd thing I've ever heard. So I forgot it, and he just laughed it off. Well, when I went back months later to shoot aerials around France, I flew the helicopter up the Tourmalet where we went at night. And as we're flying up and we get the shot looking down on the road, we were shooting down the road, there are these giant sperm painted on the road.
Yeah.
Do you think he did it to mess with you, and he had gone back
the
day after?
Yeah, he went back to paint them on the thing. But I could not wait to call him and go, Ben, you remember when I told you I saw the sperm? Except when I was hallucinating, they weren't just painted on the road. They were actually swimming.
Like floating in front of
me. Yeah, they were floating in front of me up the road.
You're so lucky you didn't fall off the road. Because, at some point, if you're cycling for 24 hours, you know, you got a bit swervy at some point.
And drops were just amazing. It was like,
yeah, and you saw what happened to some of the riders.
The Dutch rider,
when Vanessa, the Dutch rider, went over. So, really, I have to tell you, we were just selected for a film festival, a prestigious film festival in the States, and I was worried that maybe in the States people wouldn't appreciate the story because it's a very down under story. And the guy, I said to the guy, I said, what really appealed to you about the film? Because he really liked it. And he said, it's the audacity of what you guys did as filmmakers, because you left yourself no insurance. Mm. If you fell off and broke your collarbone, the whole thing was over. And really, I have to say that it wasn't until we got through the death stage and we survived that I said to Ben, I said, we have no insurance. Like if we fall over, this whole thing, this whole approach, years of work is all gone. So we were much more cautious for the second half of the ride, thinking about not falling over and just making it.
Yeah.
Because you were riding on original 1928.
And that was dumb. yeah,
Tour de France, Tour de France bikes. And at one point, your handlebars came completely off.
Yes,
and you fixed it with lighting rigs. Equipment. I couldn't believe that.
Well, so the Tour de France. A couple of interesting stats. The Tour de France in 1928 was almost twice as long as the Tour de France today. The bikes were twice as heavy. They had no gears. They had very bad brakes. Terribly designed. Really uncomfortable. And with no gears, riding up those mountains is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I had a really bad hip injury after I finished the ride for about a year. Wow. I could not get rid of the inflammation in my hip from just the pressure of pedaling.
Just the constant physical strain of it.
Yeah.
So what happens to the documentary now that it's done? And it's an absolute gem. There must be some massive plan for where does it go now?
Well, we premiered in New Zealand, the New Zealand Film Festival. It's here in Acme playing this month here in Melbourne. Then we're working with Madman, who are a distributor here in Down Under, Australia. So we're hoping, you know, maybe finds a home here on a network. We have interest from a New Zealand network. And then in the States, we actually, as a favor, we put it into the Louisville Film Festival. I did it as a favor to a friend because generally you want to go with a bigger film festival out of the gate. But we thought we could just slip under the radar. We didn't do any press. We just let him put it on as an opening film, and then it won the festival favorite award, which we thought would put us out of contention for the big film festivals. But then last week we found out that we've just been accepted for a very big film festival where it's going to play.
Congrats.
And then the American Documentary Film Festival in Palm Springs selected us to be the opening film there. And so after that, we are taking it around the country to Regal cinemas around the United States. And that'll play in all major cities, like 10 major cities around the States on a big screen, because we want people, we put so much effort into making this as a 4K film, super 35 millimeter digital print, that we want people to see it that way before it ends up on a tablet or on TV.
And it's going to get aired before the Tour de France every year. I'm sure it's going to become one of those classics that's like, before you watch the actual race, here's one from, you know.
Well, the Tour de France in 1928 had the highest attrition rate of any Tour de France in history. And I just love that there's this Down Under connection. And Robbie McEwen, who's a fantastic Australian cyclist, agreed to do the voice of Sir Hubert Opperman, who he met.
Wow.
And he's a 3-time green jersey winner at the Tour de France. And he did a great job doing the voice of Opperman. So, yes, I'm with you. I'm hoping that it becomes a film that maybe gets played before the Tour de France goes out. Because I think SBS runs Tour de France, right? So maybe it will be one of those films where people go, Australia was there.
If you're listening, SBS.
Yeah, exactly. But if you do get a chance, go and see it in the cinema, because the cinematic shots in the film are amazing. And you can see it right now down at Acme. And we'll give you the times and dates.
Yeah, and it has a great, I hope you, the guy who mixed it is a fantastic mixer who...
When you say mix, you mean edit?
The sound mix, So all the sound, because we didn't have the money to have a sound recordist with us, so the cameraman had to try to monitor the sound while we were shooting, and then I was the one that changed the batteries. And so, you know, we had to cut a lot of corners, but we didn't cut corners where it counted, which was in the equipment, the quality of the people who were shooting. Angenot is a French lens company, gave us 400,000 euros worth of zoom lenses to borrow because of they're so passionate about the film. And then Doug Delaney, who was one of the colorists on Lord of the Rings, he did sort of mates rates to help us do the color. And then this guy, Derek Vanderhurst, did the sound mix. So we were very lucky to have some people who just worked on it because of
labor of love
and certainly blood, sweat, and tears to get it done.
Fantastic. Well, Phil, thank you so much for joining us today on the Brekkie Bears. And again, La Ride playing at Acme at the moment. Definitely check it out. Even if you're not a fan of cycling, because I'll be honest, I'm I'm not a fitness guy myself. I'm not good with the cycling thing, but I still loved it anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I'll back you up there. It was I'm not a cycling person, but loved the film. It was really good.
But that was really the intention too, was to make it appeal to people who maybe were just Francophiles, people that just wanted to see France as a love letter to France.
Or just were fans of you and wanted to see you, you know, go through some physical hardship.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure. Anytime.
I love the abuse. Have you heard of like this? These film cinema demand, have you heard of that before, where you can actually rent out a theater? And apparently they're doing that with the film here in Australia.
Oh, yeah?
So yeah, some people are actually booking. Do you book the theater, I think?
To watch you?
Yeah. Not to watch me, to watch the film.
You're a good draw card.
Ah, you little bugger.
Yeah.
Zimbabwe, huh?
There's the accent.
Yeah, no. When's the next flight to Zimbabwe?
Well, thank you very much, Phil. And we'll also catch you on screens in April for the 29th season of The Amazing Race.
Is that when it's back?
Yes. So anything that you can tell us about the season?
I can tell you that we have a very different setup to the start. And I will tell you that the season, in my professional opinion, takes a little bit to get going out of the gate, just my opinion. I feel like by episode three, it really hits its stride. And episode three, four, and five are just killer. And then it just sort of holds. But it does. This season does take a little bit to get going out of the gate.
So stay with it.
Yeah, you got to stay with it. But if we haven't got you by episode three, then we're never going to get you. But I think episode three is really awesome. And then it just keeps going and builds momentum from there.
Awesome. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This has been a podcast for the Brekkie Bears on Joy 94.9.
If you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes and Stitcher? Woof grr.
Woof grr.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.